Good friends all, as we pause in our service of worship to welcome our esteemed guest speaker today, we also pause to welcome those particularly who may be listening from afar on the radio. We'll invite you in the mind's eye to come and take a seat with us. That is, by imagination, through the door you'll come, and our ushers will find you a seat and offer you a bulletin. So we'll accustom ourselves to the space. We can see the nave and its familiar stained glass, conic stained glass windows. There is a lower bay to the east and to the west of windows that depict spaces and places of importance in human and religious history, from Jerusalem to Oxford to Wittenberg to Boston. And location is important. But you'll notice that these are the smaller windows. The larger windows here, the great windows east and west, are given not to place but to person, in keeping with the long history at Boston University of a sense, actually a philosophical tradition of personalism, the dignity and worth of each human being. So we have Athanasius of Alexandria. We have John Wesley, remembering his last words, "The best of all is God is with us." We have Abraham Lincoln here in stained glass. You'll remember from your Boston University history study that Lincoln, in his earthly life, our most powerful president, did not spend a great deal of time in formal worship in church. But since 1949 and his presence in stained glass here, his attendance has been perfect, a spotless record. These are people all around who add to, you'll notice, dear radio listener, as you settle in, who add to the expanse of grace and freedom. Maybe your eye will come to the sculpture of Bach and Beethoven here at the chancel, or the evangelists with their Lord in front. Maybe you will be delighted to see our provost, Dr. Jean Morrison, here and hear her voice in the reading, and especially pleased and honored to have the 10th president of Boston University, Robert A. Brown, helping to lead. You know, 7 of the 10 presidents did speak from this physical pulpit. Presidents Marsh and Case and Chris Janer and Silber and Wessling and Cobanian and Brown were here and spoke. To their voices and to those voices, historic voices, dear listener, we add today the 6,000 and more voices of those who are graduating, a day of reverence, but a day of joy, and the gathered community, friends and parents, sisters, cousins, and aunts who have come with them to remember today. And from this pulpit, the pulpit of Franklin Littell, Howard Thurman, Alan Knight, Chalmers, and Martin Luther King, to welcome our most esteemed baccalaureate speaker for May 2011. He is the Linus Pauling Professor of Chemistry and Physics at California Institute of Technology. He is a recipient in 1999 of the Nobel Prize in Chemistry, in femtoscience, which is the study of atomic motion in very small spans of time. That is the first time the word femtoscience has been used in liturgy here, and it's high time. He comes to us, speaking of Alexandria, with a bachelor's and a master's degree from the University of Alexandria, that cradle in ancient and modern civilization of fine culture, and a PhD from the University of Pennsylvania. In 2009, President Barack Obama invited him to be a member of the President's Advisory Council on Science and Technology, and further to become the first United States science envoy to the Middle East. He brings us many awards and gifts received in the past, books and articles, numberless to notice. Take a moment to go on the website and read his resume today. But especially he brings us a heart and a rich humanity, committed as we are to international education and world peace, a sense of a common faith, a common ground, and a common hope. Will you join me to extend the right hand of fellowship in a warm Marsh Chapel greeting to our 2011 speaker, Dr. Ahmed Sawail.
Thank you very much. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. And thank you, Dean Hill, for arranging for this wonderful window for Alexandria, where I was educated and born. So that's wonderful of you to do that. Well, when President Brown called me and said that the Board of Trustees has decided to award me an honorary degree from Boston University, I was pleased and honored. But then when he later called me and said, or wrote to me and said, could you give the baccalaureate address in Marsh Chapel? I was so elated because I thought that the trustees have decided to give me another honorary degree in theology. Well, I guess he didn't go that far. And so, but I'm indeed delighted to be with you, your family, and friends today. My dear graduates, the baccalaureate ceremony from the European medieval time until today is a service in celebration of and thanksgiving for lives dedicated to learning and wisdom. The learning you achieved through light of knowledge and wisdom you acquired so far from mentors and from the love of your family who supported you throughout. And incidentally, the last stimulus check from them will be cashed today. As soon to be fellow laureate of this world-class university in a few hours, and perhaps more importantly as a parent who has witnessed the joy of college graduation, I would like to share with you some personal experiences in the hope that you may see why you are fortunate to reach this milestone and what you can do with your fortune to forge a new future. In this century, you are witnessing revolutions of knowledge. And my message is simple. Always be guided by the light of knowledge to shape the future of yourself, of your country, and of the world at large. When I came to the United States in 1969, I was not dreaming of a Nobel Prize, nor I was dreaming of acquiring a Bill Gates fortune. Armed with a very good education I received in Egypt, I was simply on a voyage of quest for knowledge, that of a PhD research in a reputable institution in this land of opportunity. America was a magnet to many of my generation because of its leadership in science and technology and its unique democratic values. The historic landing of Neil Armstrong on the moon in 1969 was enough to demonstrate America's outlook on the new frontiers of revolutionary knowledge. People often ask me, how does one get a Nobel Prize? And what is the secret to success? Sadly, they never asked this question before I received the Nobel Prize. I believe it was the passion for science that supplied the energy, and it was the optimism that made the almost impossible possible. My dear graduates, success comes to the prepared mind. Success is not like rain that falls from the sky equally upon everybody. Success is what you reap when you sow with passion and optimism. Times have changed. The world is more complex, and America of today is not the one I came to in the 1960s. We now in the so-called global age, threatened by chemical, biological, and nuclear disasters, and the United States is facing real challenges. The rise of economic superpowers such as India and China, the conflict of wars overseas, and most importantly, in my view, the change in cultural, educational, and political values. Yes, there are challenges and changes, but you can still make your own success in your own way because you are fortunate to have received an excellent education in a 21st century developed world society. Your education is unaffordable to at least 80% of the 6 billion people on the planet who make merely a dollar a day. As importantly, America continues to provide you with opportunities that even today you will not find anywhere else in the world. And here you are free to speak and worship as you please. And you can sleep at night without fear of the government or the police. These fundamental values are embedded in the foundation of this country that is built on the pillars of life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Do not listen to pessimists. Rather, forge ahead to contribute in whatever career you are passionate about, in business, government, law, art, or science. I do not know the future of business or politics, but I know the future of science. Your generation and the ones after you will continue to seek basic understanding of nature and make the exciting discoveries that lie ahead. From the deciphering of the most fundamental constituents of matter to the reach of the cosmos boundaries and to the uncovering of our origin and the miracle of life. But there is more. From the beginning of time, the quest for knowledge has been the driving force for revolutionary changes, not only in causing paradigm shifts in our understanding of the cosmos, but also as an agent for the naissance and renaissance of human societies. The European Renaissance would have been impossible without enlightenment about the significance of knowledge and rational thinking. I think too much credit is given to the impact of politics on the progress of society. In fact, without scientific knowledge, there is no development, and politicians would not be able to promise prosperity. Just think of what would our world be like without electricity, penicillin, and the airplane. From the agriculture and the industrial revolution to today's genomics and IT revolutions, knowledge is at center stage for societal development. Even in politics, knowledge is becoming essential, and the youth of your generation elsewhere in the world is now harnessing knowledge of technology to do what those of my generation thought impossible, to acquire liberty from totalitarian regimes. You are aware, no doubt, of the people's revolution sweeping the Middle East as I speak. I witnessed in real time the Egyptian uprise that began on January 25th of this year and remarkably led to the removal of Mr. Mubarak in only 18 days. I saw university students in the hundreds of thousands and then in the millions marching to Tahrir Square in Cairo. The name of the square means liberty, and that is precisely what the youth wanted from a 30-year-old regime. They demonstrated peacefully with impeccable organization skills and in unison. In my generation, we would probably have used stones, sticks, and guns in order to rise up. In your generation, they used Facebook, Twitter, and SMS. Without the discovery of the chip, wireless technology, and the internet, this Egyptian revolution may never have succeeded in a peaceful and civilized transformation. Although the road ahead is bumpy, already hopeful signs are emerging. A few months after the revolution, Egypt announced the establishment of a new city for science and technology on 300 acres of land, and the sole purpose of the quest is the quest for the useful knowledge. So the 21st century education that you are fortunate to have received at BU is far-reaching, beyond the classical boundaries, not just across so-called interdisciplinary and multidisciplinary fields, but also between nations and maybe soon across planets. Perhaps the best words to describe the value of education and knowledge are those of Thomas Jefferson in 1782, writing in his notes on Virginia. And I quote, "The general objects of a bill to diffuse knowledge more generally through the mass of the people are to provide education adapted to the years, to the capacity, and to the condition of everyone, and directed to their freedom and happiness." Remarkably, Jefferson, more than two centuries ago, saw the virtue of education on the individual and the global levels. My dear graduates, this is just the beginning of a long voyage in your walks of life. And this is a new life here. In this journey, invest your knowledge fortune wisely and forge the place and time into an opportunity. Have a dream, as did one of the most renowned alumni of BU, Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., and work hard for your dream. Without hard work, we are not entitled to a good life. And without compassion, we will not attain the good life in a world majority population of half-nots. The investment of your family and your country in you is for a good reason. You need a good education to lead a fuller, richer life. The country needs you to build its future, and the world will be a better place when knowledge replaces ignorance. Thank you very much, and congratulations.